You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by Equal Pay for Chupacabras. Instead, it's brought to you by us, or maybe you. You've heard me read ads for brands before like Bombas, Socks, Zola.com, and Breakout Games, all amazing companies that I truly believe in. These ads are great because they keep the show free for you and introduce listeners to new products you'll love. It's a win for everyone, and I'm happy to have the help and expertise of Midroll Media to ensure that the show continues to have great advertisers. If you're interested in advertising with our show, go to midroll.com/sideways and click contact to let the folks at Midroll know. They also represent great shows like Generation Y and My Favorite Murders, so you can reach an array of engaged listeners. That's Midroll, midroll.com/sideways. You know how to spell sideways.
Well, hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I'm your host, Joe, joined as always by
Steve
and
your other host, Devin.
Yeah, the usual.
Joe's not the only host.
Yeah.
He's the host this week.
Yeah, I guess.
I'll let it slide.
All right.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Well, I guess you know what's really going on in the back of my head, huh?
He's been reading about this story too long.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. Well, here we go. Yeah, I totally want to seize the podcast all for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This week, we're going to talk about a fun disappearance that a lot of people think was a murder. And that's a guy in Australia named Bob Chappell. His name is spelled Chappell, but it's pronounced Chappell, apparently. He disappeared January 26, 2009, in West Hobart, Australia, which is in Tasmania, which, if you don't know, is an island off the south coast of the Australian mainland. It's part of Australia. And the story was suggested by our listeners, Lucille and Renee, who no doubt are Tasmanian themselves, because this story, as it turns out, is a really big deal in Tasmania, and actually Australia in general.
Oh, yeah.
Even though a lot of Americans maybe have not heard of it, but it's big down there.
Now you will have.
And it is ongoing. Yeah, now you're going to know all about this story. America, Europe, Pakistan, you name it. So Bob Chappell, when he went missing in 2009, Bob was living with a woman named Sue Neil Fraser, who is now in prison for murder. And Bob and Sue had been together about 18 years when Bob disappeared. And according to some people, well, the fun had gone out of the relationship.
Mm.
Yeah.
That does tend to happen to a lot of relationships.
It does happen, yes. But that, of course, made her kind of a good candidate as a suspect for murder.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Typically, you know, it's not unusual, right? But like I said, a ton of people in Tasmania think she's innocent and that her conviction for Bob's murder was a huge miscarriage of justice. And there's a big campaign going on to find information to exonerate Sue with all kinds of court appeals, one of which just happened.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact. And you probably, if you go out and look, you'll see that billboard that's got that picture of Sue, and it says reward $40,000 for information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, proving the innocence of Sue Neil Fraser. And yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about how the whole appeal thing played out here, but let me give you a little more background first.
So this kind of violates our 5-year rule, but
well,
kind of not.
It's over 5 years, but you know, I picked the story and everything, and then after I go out to do my research, I suddenly realize, oh, all this new stuff happened, mm-hmm. and whenever you do a search, all these new links pop up.
Yeah.
And,
technically, he's over the limit, but luckily, nothing conclusive came about.
Yeah.
Which is why we're still talking about.
Yeah.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so who knows? I mean, maybe she's still in prison now, but who knows? Maybe somebody will spring her one of these days or she'll finish her sentence and just get out of prison.
With our luck, like 2 days before we drop this episode.
Yeah, really?
Prove conclusively.
Somebody will confess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, back to the beginning here. Bob and Sue were both divorced with kids. I think he had 3, she had 2, and I think the kids were grown by the time this happened.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, Bob and Sue had been a thing for about 18 years when Bob finally shuffled off the stage. And I'm putting it that way because actually nobody really knows what happened to Bob.
Nope.
No, he just vanished. Everybody assumes he's dead, which includes the police, the courts, his family, friends. Yeah.
But maybe not.
But no body was ever found.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually not 100% rock solid.
There's actually
that Bob is dead.
A very big void in evidence for what the heck happened to him.
Well, yeah. Interestingly enough, no body was found. No murder weapon was found.
Right.
Yeah, I know. And so it's interesting that police managed to get a conviction out of this mm-hmm. whole thing.
Agreed.
Yeah, but in 2008, that's just months before this happened. Sue and Bob bought themselves a nice big boat, a 53-foot catch called the Four Winds, which actually I've seen photos of it. It's really nice.
Yeah.
What's a catch?
A catch is a two-masted sailboat, but it's the tall mast is in front and the short mast is in the rear of the boat, the stern.
Cool.
That's a catch. And there's also the yawl, which is a similar rig, but a yawl, the aft mast is stepped a little further back and it's smaller.
Okay.
So there's a difference.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Unfortunately, everybody in podcast land couldn't see Joe's defining hand gestures.
Yeah, I was
so...
making hand gestures at Devin.
He was also looking very concerned at me, like, I'm concerned you don't understand this already.
How could you not know what this is?
I mean, you're about to buy a boat.
Right. And for,
that's true.
And actually, okay, for the sailing purists out there, the distinction between a catch and a yawl is the yawl, the mast is stepped behind the steering station, and the catch is stepped in front of the steering station.
Okay.
You're just showing off now.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's how you tell the difference between the two. Okay. But they bought it in Queensland, which is on the northeast coast of Australia, quite a ways from Tasmania. And they had ideas for the boat about retiring, doing a lot of sailing. They were planning maybe a dream trip of sailing around Australia. But alas, fate intervened. They never took that trip. When they were in Queensland, after they bought the boat, they hired two crew members to help them sail to Hobart. And their names were Peter Stevenson and David Casson.
And presumably that's because they were unfamiliar with the boat, and these guys...
They had some sailing experience. I know Sue, at least, had owned a fairly decent-sized sailboat previously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, and so presumably... And that was while they were together, so presumably he picked up a lot of experience sailing on that. And,
right.
And so I
but I'm guessing it was kind of a you-know-better, and this is a bit of a training run for us.
Yeah, well,
idea.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know how big the previous boat was. Obviously, a 53-foot catch is kind of bigger and harder to handle than a little 26-foot sloop or something like that.
And, you know, if it's been a couple years.
Yeah.
You know?
Or maybe they just wanted a couple of extra hands so they could actually catch some sleep.
Also possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It could be. That would definitely make for some lighter work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they hired these two guys, and then unfortunately Bob had a few medical issues and wound up checking into the hospital for a little bit, and he decided to fly back to Hobart while Sue and the crew sailed the boat back. And as for Hobart, that it is on the southeast coast of Tasmania, on what's called the River Derwent, and I'm no doubt mispronouncing that.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the Australians call it the Darwin or something like that, or the Darwin, or I don't know. Somebody send me an email.
The doorstop, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And where Hobart is, it's on the River Derwent, but it's kind of more of a big inlet there. It's huge. It's wide.
Okay.
Know, it's near the sea.
Yeah.
Where they had it anchors off Battery Point in Hobart in the river on the west side of the river. And, of course, when they bought the boat, it had a few issues, which is not a surprise. Boats usually do.
And it was a used boat, right?
It was a used boat, yeah.
So boats are holes in the water that you throw money in.
Oh, hell yeah. And it was could have been one of the things it placed a little strain on their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, they do that. Mm-hmm. And I know, Steve, you're going through like a little project right now that's placing a little strain on yours.
Yes. And it is a little project, but it has turned into a big project.
Mm-hmm. As they all do.
Yes. Don't remodel your home. It's a bad idea. Just buy a new one.
Yep.
Just throw that one in the garbage.
Just burn the old one and start over.
Uh-huh.
Insurance money's great for that.
Yeah, just sell it and buy something.
Yeah.
But the boat had had some work done before leaving Queensland, and then, of course, after getting in Hobart, it needed some more work done. And, of course, on the last day that he was seen, Bob Chappell was on the Four Winds working on the boat, or at least that's what he said to Sue.
Well, and, of course, if it needed work, then it would make sense that you would just go and work on the boat.
Yeah.
If you got the time and you want to retire on it.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't think around about it.
Yeah, and besides, which this is your dream boat, you want to get the thing all ship-shape, no pun intended, and have it all ready to go.
Yeah.
So you got to get that stuff taken care of.
Yep.
And so Bob was working away, and on the morning of 26th January, Sue visited Bob in the yacht. left late morning to go and have lunch with a friend. Turns out the friend was his daughter, Ann Sanchez.
Bob's daughter?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bob's daughter. Okay. Carolyn Ann Sanchez. I think she goes by Ann.
Okay. Sue was going to have lunch with her?
Sue went to have lunch with her. Okay. And they met at the Royal Yacht Club, which is actually right where it was anchored anyway. It was anchored offshore. I assume they didn't have a slip at the Royal Yacht Club, even though I think they were members and had privileges, but it looks like it's all full. If you look at the aerials, it's all full, and there's literally dozens of yachts anchored offshore from it. So I assume there's a waiting list to get into the Royal Yacht Club.
I wouldn't be shocked by that.
That's why they had their boat moored out way out in the river.
In the cheap seats.
Yeah, instead of on a slip. Yeah. During this lunch, Ann Sanchez took a photo, which was later used as evidence against Sue. We'll hear about that later. Mm-hmm. But then later on, about mid-afternoon, she returned to the boat. And she told police that she had an argument with Bob, and Bob told her he wanted to stay on the yacht overnight. So she took the dinghy, and their dinghy, by the way, was an inflatable craft, kind of like a Zodiac.
Mm-hmm. Big rubber boat.
Big rubber boat. It's kind of
with a motor.
The pontoons, and it's got the flat transom in the back, and it had an outboard on it. Mm-hmm. So she takes the dinghy back to shore, which left Bob stranded on the yacht overnight. And this was the last time that Sue saw Bob, at least as far as...
Potentially.
Yeah, potentially, maybe, yeah. And she was questioned later and told police about leaving him stranded on the yacht. And she said that she thought it was safer to leave Bob on the yacht without the dinghy because she said he was not actually good at getting in and out of it on his own. And apparently she was worried he might screw up and fall into the water and drown. I don't know.
Well, was that because he was just kind of clumsy at it? Or is it because of like a medical issue? Because he'd had the medical issues that prevented him from, with the boat home. So
I had never heard it said exactly why it was she was concerned about his abilities or getting in and out of it.
I wondered it as I did all the reading and couldn't figure it out. So, okay.
Yeah. Presumably because they'd been married 18 years and she knew that
married.
That they'd been together for 18 years and that she kind of thought, well, he's kind of an idiot.
He fell in the water 19 times.
And I hate him.
Yeah.
And I despise him. So he was just incompetent.
He's just so dumb.
Everything. But of course, some people contradicted that. There were other people who said, no, we saw him get in and out of it all the time off the yacht, and he had no problem at all doing it.
It was only when Sue was around drugging him that he had a hard time.
Maybe that was it.
It's crazy.
Yeah. When Sue got back to shore from her visit with Bob on the boat, she tied the dinghy to a ladder at the Royal Yacht Club. She said she tied it her usual way with three knots. I don't know what those three knots were. But she said that it had never come undone before.
So, of course, it came undone.
Naturally.
Yep.
Of course, yeah.
Surprise.
Would of course have it.
So it comes undone overnight, or somebody untied it. The evidence indicates actually that somebody did untie it because the painter, sailors are, they got to call everything a different name. Mm-hmm. So that
it's
rope...
like the Eskimos with 700 names for ice.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. And 337 for snow. Yeah.
Yes.
Damn it.
But anyway, so what do sailors call that?
The painter, which is the rope that's tied to the front of the boat that you tie to the dock with. And it was found inside the dinghy and not trailing in the water as it would have been if the knot had come in then. So somebody undid those knots
and tossed it in the boat
and tossed the rope in the boat sometime overnight.
Someone who was bad at staging things.
Yeah, apparently. At 5:40 a.m. the next morning, that would be January 27th, an unnamed person, I'm sure if I'd gone through, read through 300 articles, I could have found this guy's name.
I don't know that it matters, though.
No, not really. But somebody found the dinghy bobbing against the rocks, untied. Mm-hmm. He secured it and then headed out into the water in a boat with somebody else who also, I don't have his name. And they happened to pass nearby the Four Winds, and they noticed that it was very low in the water.
Convenient.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
This is probably a stupid question, but the dinghies usually have the name of the ship that they're associated or the boat they're associated with them?
It depends on how much money and how big the boat is and everything like mm-hmm. that. So if the dinghy is big enough, obviously the bigger the yacht, the bigger the dinghy,
right?
And that is when it gets to a certain point.
Wait, are you talking about the owner or the thing that floats in the water away from
you?
Yeah. Good point. But yeah, typically, I mean, the larger boats, a lot of them do have, they're labeled one way or another.
But
like
this
that.
One, was this it one, labeled?
No, I've seen pictures of this one, and I have not seen it. But okay. Typically, I don't think people paint the boat name on an inflatable raft anyway.
Well,
I mean,
Sharpie or something, just so you know who's who's, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm sorry. I just think there's probably a lot of dinghies on a,
That's a good point. You would expect everybody to just know which one is theirs, I
guess.
Think,
Yeah.
But
mine would have Sharpie on it.
Yeah. Yeah. But this one, I've seen a few pictures of it. And I saw no signs of any labeling whatsoever, okay. other than the brand name that was on the side of it.
So they just happened to pass by the Four Winds.
But yeah, these guys happened to pass by the Four Winds. They noticed it's really low in the water, alarmingly low. So they stopped, climbed aboard, noticed there was still a little bit of blood and a few things, like a bloody knife, a few things like that laying around. So they called the police. The police phoned Sue at Bob and Sue's house at 7:11 a.m. on January 27th that told her they'd gotten a report that their boat was sinking. So Sue gets in the car and heads down to the Royal Yacht Club. And when she shows up and police showed up and boarded the Four Winds, they noticed some clues. Blood on the steps leading down into the salon, a knife on the floor of the wheelhouse, a flashlight with blood on it, but no Bob. Bob was gone.
Okay.
Of course, the boat was still low in the water and sinking because it turns out that a pipe to the forward head had been cut. It was a plastic pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, nautical toilets are, they don't use good water to flush the toilet. They just bring in water from outside to flush the toilet. And that's until somebody cut that pipe, which let water into the boat.
So it's an intake line that is now bleeding into the interior of the boat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, it turns out there was a seacock that was underneath the flooring in the forward part of the boat. I should say the bow. It had been opened also. And
what's a seacock?
Seacock is just
a plug.
Valve.
God. It's like the plug in your bathtub.
Yeah.
Basically, it's that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, we're just using a lot of boaty terms, and I feel like our listeners, terms, but.
Very good point. No, yeah, the seacock is there, but normally it would seem like kind of a dangerous thing to have, but when you haul the boat out of the water and you've got water in the bilges, it's nice to be able to open something
just
up and drain the bilges. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
So water is really heavy.
Yeah.
It is very heavy. Yeah.
And pulling a boat out of the water full of water will actually make it tear itself apart.
Oh, yeah.
It's not meant to sustain the water in that way.
Yeah, yeah. It can be kind of hard on things, yeah. Oh, and also, last of all, the bilge pump had been shut off.
Okay.
Yeah, and
So the one means to pump that water back out has now been defaulted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So somebody obviously had sabotaged the boat, right?
Yeah.
Looks that way to me, anyway. At some point, the first time Sue was on the boat with the police, I don't know if she was with them the first time they boarded it or maybe later in the day, but she noticed some rub marks on the wooden surrounds of the main hatch of the yacht.
And that main hatch is to the entrance to the lower deck.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
just again, clarifying.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one that's kind of half door, half hatch, the kind I'm talking about, where there's a little door in the front, and then there's a hatch on top that slides back so you don't bang your head.
Yep. This is like what we were talking about in the Jim Gray episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So she noticed some rub marks on that, which were kind of inconspicuous. She said they had not been there before. And the police noticed there were also fibers in the marks that appeared to be from a rope. And also, I don't know if they noticed this because there was an empty bracket or Sue pointed it out, but the boat's fire extinguisher was missing as well. And it was apparently a large, very large, heavy model fire extinguisher. It was gone.
Okay.
Yeah. And so also checking for evidence around and stuff, the police looked at the dinghy. They checked it with Luminol. Mm-hmm. Luminol, you spray that on it and blood activates it, makes it glow under a black light.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, just as a lot of defenders of Sue have pointed out, other things besides blood can activate Luminol and make it glow.
Mm-hmm.
So, but apparently they sprayed some Luminol on the bottom of the dinghy and, a lot of it glowed.
Lit up like a rave?
Yeah, kind of.
Sorry, maybe I'm confused. So two guys, unnamed, find the dinghy. They get in the dinghy?
No. They just said that the guy that found it secured it. And I don't know if that means he just tied it to something or if that means he drug it
up
on the
rocks. For some reason, I thought they hopped in it.
No.
Took the dinghy out.
Yeah, and so I was like, that's...
I think he just saw it, secured it, and then they went out on his boat.
Okay.
Whatever his
and
boat
then
was.
They board the Four Winds and apparently don't disrupt the crime scene.
Well, and that's another thing. That's as far as I know, they did board it. At least in one account I've heard, they boarded it. And one of those was actually a court account.
So I would presume
it's probably accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But then in other accounts I've heard that they actually just looked and they yelled and nobody seemed to be home. And then they called police maybe from a cell phone and they're only in the boat.
Okay.
So maybe they didn't actually board it. Maybe they just pulled alongside and called the police.
Okay. And to go back to your statement about Luminol.
Yeah.
The other things. Are they other things that might naturally be in a dinghy that would?
No, not necessarily. Okay. Yeah.
That would light up a luminol.
But
test?
Apparently, yeah, I can't remember. I looked, I checked out the Wikipedia page about it, and there's a lot of different substances. I think that anything that has iron in it, for example, like blood has iron,
right?
So anything that would have iron in it, you know, would definitely kind of set.
But
it
not
off.
Anything that would naturally just be all over the floor of a dinghy.
Unless they were like gutting fish in there at one point, probably not.
Yeah, no, I don't know how much.
I don't even think fish would do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just making a really stupid example. Yeah.
Cool, great. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify those two things. Sorry. Good.
Yeah,
let's
go
ahead.
So something that appeared to be blood, but it should be stated for our sake of fairness that it wasn't actually totally proven to be blood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just presumed.
Yeah, just presumed to be blood. And by the way, still no Bob.
What about Bob?
Yeah, he didn't even leave a note. Long story short, though, the police looked into it. And after an 8-month investigation, which included lots of forensic examination of the boat and dinghy, lots of interrogations of Sue, and also bugging Sue's house for a while, and also interviewing everybody she knew, she was arrested, charged with murdering Bob Chappell. And after a trial, she was sentenced to 28 years in prison. I think that was in 2010. When she was sentenced, with the possibility of parole after 18 years. It was reduced on appeal later to 23 years, 13, possibility of parole.
Mm. So with a lot of what people would call very, rather circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, it was a pretty circumstantial case. It really was. Again, no murder weapon, no body. So did she murder Bob? Did somebody else murder Bob? Not everybody agrees on this. Like I said, no body, no weapon.
No Bob.
Although the prosecution thinks that Sue bashed his head in with a wrench, nobody actually knows what the murder weapon was. So maybe they were dancing his head. They kind of, oh, that's right, no body. What was saying?
Yeah.
No real smoking gun. And by that, I mean, there was no one thing that really incriminated Sue. It was just a lot of little things that added up. But before I get into Sue's guilt or innocence, I'm sure you all want to know what happened to the boat. Did it sink? Well, no.
Did it find a new home?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it has by now.
We bought it.
Yeah, I know.
Just kidding.
For a steal.
I'm sorry,
around-the-world tour. It was taken...
That's going to be a disaster.
Oh, God, no. We'd kill each other. I mean, yeah. I mean, that'd be the question, you know, like, you know, who murdered Stephen Devon? And I would say, oh, I don't know.
I was on shore leave.
Yeah, I was asleep, man. But or maybe who murdered Joe? And you guys would be like, oh.
We were on shore leave.
Yeah. Oh, back to our thing, though. It was towed to a nearby dock called Constitution Dock. That's just kind of northwest of there and north of the club. And it was kept there for a few days. I think the leaks were stopped and everything. January 28th, it was taken to a place called Clean Lift Marine and hauled out of the river for inspection.
Mm-hmm.
Clean Lift Marine is about maybe 5 miles north of there on the river. And on January 30th, the police were going over it, the forensics guys, and a swab was taken from the boat on the starboard deck, about amidships, which had DNA from an unknown female. Didn't match anything in the police database. But then about 6 weeks later, a 15-year-old homeless girl named Megan Voss had a run-in with police. A sample of her DNA was taken and put in the database, and presto, there was a match.
Uh-huh. Weird.
It's like that little bell in Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Megan Voss's DNA was on the Four Winds, and this has been a big deal to this day. I saw a picture of her. She was in court just a few months ago about this whole issue. So it's still a big deal to a lot of people. We'll talk more about that in a bit. And they also found another piece of unidentified DNA on the boat, and it has never been identified, which shouldn't come as a total surprise because, according to the police, at least 21 people had been on the boat between the time it was found sinking and when the DNA samples were taken 3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not counting forensics personnel, by the way. And, of course, people had... I'm sure been on the boat before, you know, there were people that were guests or friends or whatever. Of course, they were having it worked on by various people. And
right.
So God knows whose DNA that could have been. Or it could have been, you know, maybe a murderer. Who knows? It wasn't Sue's DNA, but yeah. So we got two pieces of DNA that, in theory, weren't supposed to be there. But Megan Voss denied that she had ever been in the Four Winds. She was very consistent about it. She was asked if she'd ever been to any of the places the boat was at, like Constitution Dock or Clean Line or Clean Lift Marine, and she said no. She said she had no idea whatsoever how it got there. And they asked her where she was the night of the murder, and she was not really sure about that either. But it turns out she was homeless, like I said, and so moving from shelter to shelter. So
it's easy to lose track of the days.
Yeah, and when she was finally questioned about this, of course, this was, you know, weeks, at least a month and a half after the murders, maybe longer than that. So
disappearance.
Yeah,
disappearance, not murder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. Disappearance, yeah.
One thing I will say is I don't know that this is what's happening here, and I'm totally, like, shooting from the hip again, as my disclaimer here. Just remembering something that I had heard, I feel like it was maybe on, like, a Last Week Tonight or something like that, about a lot of forensic labs having a hard time when there are multiple people's DNA mixed, actually isolating the correct DNA profile. It would be an amazing coincidence if it just happened that they had two DNAs mixed together that were, that provided a positive for Megan, but it's not unheard of. I mean, people have been, I believe if I'm remembering this correctly, people have been convicted on what was presented as like hardcore DNA evidence, but you know, there were like five or six different blood.
It was a blended mix.
Yeah. And that it just happened that, you know, you could read certain markers as matching. And so the lab was like, yeah, it matches, but it was really only like two or three markers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's what happened here, but
that would be a hell of a coincidence.
It would be a hell of a coincidence, but it's happened before. I mean, people have been convicted on evidence like that. I believe, again, disclaimer, I believe that I heard that. I might have just dreamed it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. Dreams are fine.
But, they're admissible on this podcast.
No, but you bring up a good point, too, which is that DNA testing is not infallible.
Yeah.
Even though DNA is a really, really good way to identify people, that assumes that everybody's doing their job right.
Yep.
And everybody's being honest, which is not always the case.
Yeah. Sometimes there's an incentive to not be forthright that you made a mistake that tarnishes your reputation, which then screws everything up down the line.
And so there's all kinds of different ways that you can mess up your DNA test. So we shouldn't take this as total proof that Megan Voss was on the Four Winds. And the prosecution says she was not. They believe she wasn't. They think it's most likely it was.
So how did her DNA get there?
Well, the prosecution has said they think the most likely probable theory is that a policeman tracked it onto the yacht somehow.
So it's transference.
Yeah, transference.
It's certainly possible.
Although there's been an argument against that also.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, but the Victoria Police Department apparently came in and reviewed the case because of all the controversy. And they looked at the DNA sample they'd taken. They said there's just, I guess, too much DNA or something like that for it to have just been a transference. It had to have been a direct application from somebody.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah, that's what they said. But again, you know, again, I this whole DNA thing is just, there's so many ways it can get screwed up.
Yeah.
And of course, Megan Voss has been very consistent all the way along, which is not really typical. You know, somebody who's actually got something to hide like that, usually when they're presented with that evidence, they're like, maybe I was down there. Because they actually gave her an out. And they said, it was tied up at Constitution Dock right over there. Were you over there? She could have said, yeah, I remember I was over there like being homeless one night and I stumbled around and put my hands all over a lot of boats.
Yeah.
She didn't do that.
Yeah.
She's, you know, even though it was right near where she lived, she could have just said, yeah, I remember stumbling around over there. Mm-hmm. No doubt I touched it. She didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so again, that doesn't prove that she's, you know, absolutely innocent. Maybe she did murder. Maybe she is responsible for Bob's disappearance.
She's also 15.
Yeah, she was 15 at the time of the murder. Yeah.
Just saying.
That's true. We'll talk a little bit more about Megan in a little bit here, but first let's look at the case against Sue Neil Fraser, who, you know, like I said, has a lot of supporters down in Tasmania. The prosecution's theory of the crime is this. Bob and Sue's relationship was reaching its end. From a financial standpoint, Sue would be much better off with Bob dead and her winding up with whole ownership of all their common assets, you know, house, boat, whatever. Rather than having to split all that stuff up with Bob and maybe, you know, him even getting 100% of stuff like maybe the house. I don't even know. He might have owned the house outright. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know whose name was on what.
Apparently, they did the math on it and they feel that Sue was significantly better off with Bob dead.
And they were not married?
They were not married.
They were just
But having been partners. Together, like, it might have been a common law marriage if they'd been together for
But they weren't.
Years.
There was no, like, you know, if they get divorced, it's half and half, divide of assets, blah, 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 blah.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so the prosecution theory is that on the night of January 26th, the afternoon of January 26th, 2009, Sue went out to the Four Winds and murdered Bob with a blunt object down in the maid cabin and returned ashore, went home, Later that night, she had a phone conversation with a guy named Richard King, in which King demanded to speak to Bob, and Sue said Bob was unreachable at the moment. And then after the call ended, which would have been about 10:35 p.m., Sue became worried that King might go down to the Four Winds himself and discover the body, so she drove down to the waterfront, went out to the boat in the dinghy, winched Bob's body out of the cabin. The boat had a winch on it, and so she used the winch to winch it out of the cabin, or at least to help her get the body out of the cabin.
To lift it out.
Yeah, it's a little helping hand there. And
dead weight is not easy to move.
No, it's definitely. And so having that little extra would probably have done the trick for her. Then their theory is she tied the body to the large, or put the body into the dinghy, tied it to that large heavy fire extinguisher that I mentioned earlier to weigh it down, took it somewhere down the river to deeper water, because they searched the river pretty carefully with divers and everything. We're not able to find it. And dumped the body, then went back to the boat to clean it up and get rid of as much evidence as possible. So, you know, pieces of carpet had been removed and stuff like this. And so, somebody did try to at least get rid of some of the evidence, although not all of it. And then she also attempted, of course, to sink the boat. And according to this is also part of their theory, only Sue or Bob would have been familiar enough with the plumbing on that boat to be able to do what she did. Unless somebody happened to come...
What they allege she did.
What they allege that she did. Unless whoever came aboard the boat and murdered Bob really knew a lot about boats.
Which is possible.
I mean, Joe knows enough about boats.
Well, you know, but even me, if I go to the forward head and you say to me, Joe, slash the intake line, I wouldn't know which one was the intake
line.
Fair enough. I really wouldn't.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, you have to actually know your own boat to know that stuff, probably.
And sorry, I don't think we talked about this. What was the Sue and Bob... Were they big people? Was she big? Was he big? I mean,
were they comparable size
to each other?
They were
both
average
of them?
Height and weight.
They were average height. And they seemed to be reasonably similar in size. Yeah, he was not a huge guy, and she was not a tiny petite woman.
Okay, great.
So, yeah.
Just is it even reasonable for her to have, you know, been able to even move his body at all?
Mm-hmm. I think that, on a sailboat, you do have winches all over the place that have to pull heavy stuff, like pull anchors up or
pull
sails.
Right, but you do have
taut,
to, get a body to a place where you can get the winch. I mean,
Oh, yeah. Well, so. that's what those rub marks in the hatches theorized came from.
Is the rope.
The rope goes down, she ties it around his chest or something like that, and then starts winching it up. And I'm sure it would have been a kind of brutally hard job. I mean, you know, obviously she didn't plan the crime as carefully as she probably should have.
I also guess I just have a problem with she's the one who pointed the rope marks out.
Uh-huh.
And if she had caused them with the winch dragging.
She'd have kept her mouth shut.
She would have, yeah.
Yeah, that's one possibility. She would have kept her mouth shut. I don't know if that was maybe her trying to get out ahead of, the whole thing and
It was dumb if she did. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, it was dumb. I mean, I think, but again, that there. I've seen other cases where people point stuff out to the police that later incriminated them. It's like I really do think that it's either maybe arrogance or maybe they're just trying to get ahead. You know, they don't want the police to point to this and say to you, "What's this?" and have you look all guilty. Instead, you just say, "Hey, wow, what's that, policeman?" And so that's
dumb.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But anyway, I never said Sue was brilliant.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, anyway, back to the prosecution's theory.
So, what do they say? Let's finish this up.
So she scuttles the boat, or at least attempts to, then takes the dinghy back to shore, casts it adrift, goes home. At 3:08 a.m., she made a 10-pound call at her landline. So that's 10-pound. And apparently in Australia, what that does is it tells you the number of the last incoming call that you received.
Okay.
It's like, what do we have for here that we used to have before? Was it Star 6-9?
Star 6-9.
Yeah. Same thing. This is the prosecution's theory.
Why did she do a 10-pound?
I think she wanted to see because she was going to tell the police that she was home all night.
Uh-huh.
Now, if somebody had been trying to call her.
I see.
Yeah. And so, her last call was an incoming call from Richard King.
Great.
So she 10-pounds it, and that's the call. Then, bingo. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, the prosecution's theory seems reasonable enough, but how to convince a jury of this? Because remember, then it's not can't just be kind of reasonable. It's got to be beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, because, theoretically, she could have woken up in the middle of the night, thought the phone had rang, and had missed it, and so hit 10-pound to see if she had truly missed it or sure. if she just dreamed it.
Nothing, yeah. Or, yeah, yeah. Maybe she was taking a midnight shower and just thought, oh, yeah. I thought I heard the phone ring.
A little 3 a.m. Yeah. showering.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very common.
Yeah, all the time, I know. Well, first, what were Sue's whereabouts after she parted ways with Bob on the afternoon of January 26th? Well, okay, she says she went to shore, tied up her dinghy, got into her car, and went to Bunnings, which is the Australian version of Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She browsed for a long time, but didn't buy anything, then went home. Bob and Sue lived on Allison Street, which is about 2 miles from the Royal Yacht Club. It's about a mile and a half as the crow flies, but by street, if you walk it,
yeah.
or drive it, it's 2 miles.
It's never a straight line.
Yeah. Sue said it was getting dark when she got home, so that would be late because sunset in Hobart that day was at 8:41 p.m., and after she got home, she made 2 phone calls, and then she received that 10:05 phone call from Richard King that I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
And she was home the rest of the night until she was phoned by police the next morning at 7:11 a.m. And she drove down to the Royal Yacht Club right away. And that's on the 27th, that's what she told police. And this story, of course, did change a bit over time, as you guys may or may not know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that same morning, the owner of a house at 2 Margaret Street found a red jacket on the brick wall outside his house. And you can see this house on Google Street View. They drove past it. To lay this out for you, Marieville Esplanade is a street that runs right next to the marina, and kind of runs north-south and parallel to the shoreline. And at the north end of it, near the north end of it, at right angles, there is Margaret Street that goes off of it. It tees into it. And so this house was just right off of Marieville Esplanade. And this and where the jacket was found is about 150 yards from where Sue had tied up the dinghy the night before.
Right.
Which, the ladder in the Royal Yacht Club. Police showed the jacket to Sue. She said she'd never seen it before. But it turns out she had. In fact, it actually belonged to her.
Which is weird.
Yeah, I don't know why she didn't just own up to it. I don't quite get that. But she said she'd never seen it before. Also noticed that she had apparently injured her wrist and her thumb. She had a bandage on her thumb, and her wrist had been strapped, like she'd been sprained, maybe.
Oh. Like with an ace bandage kind of strapped, I'm guessing is what that means.
Yeah, yeah. And it turns out, remember I mentioned that photo was taken at lunch the day before? Well, her hands were visible in the photo, and she didn't have any bandages or strapping or anything.
Or obvious wounds.
So something had happened. Something had happened, you know, over the course of that less than 24 hours to mm-hmm. injure her. Like maybe moving a body. Oh, sorry. she also, at that time, unprompted. Now, remember, this is meeting the police down there. She's been told.
This is the day of.
The morning of. And she's been told, well, the boat's sinking. She shows up, the police are there. And she said that the Four Winds had been boarded by somebody 2 or 3 days before. And she said she was concerned that drug smugglers had perhaps hidden drugs on the boat.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. She talked about maybe them getting some sniffer dogs and sniffing the boat to, you know, to see if there were drugs on it.
No, I've never seen that jacket before. It's the drugs. It's the drugs.
Yeah.
It's got to be the drugs,
I'm really
right?
not talking really fast because I'm on drugs, but you should look for some drugs.
You should look for some drugs, yeah. There may be some drugs on there.
All
I don't know.
It's all the drug runners,
Smugglers. Smugglers. That's what's done it. Smugglers.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, get those dogs on my boat right
Jeez,
now.
Jeez Louise. Well,
yeah, kids, we're not advocating drugs. Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs.
Yeah, I think at this point, there was no suggestion of foul play even. I mean, they didn't even actually know that Bob was missing at this point in time. And so,
weird.
She's like going on. It was weird. She said some weird stuff.
But people do.
Well, sure. I mean, and that's not obviously a hanging offense, unless you say too much weird stuff, and then it is. But Sue had another interview with the police on February 5th, which would be 10 days after Bob went missing. She did repeat what she said about going to Bunnings after leaving Bob. And then a month later, she repeated that claim again to police. But at this point, they had a chance to check out the CCTV, that's closed-circuit television, from the store. And they couldn't find her anywhere. And they said, gee, Sue, we can't find you on any CCTV from the store. And also, by the way, Sue, did you know that Bunnings closes at 6 p.m. that day?
That's weird, because they let me in.
It's not the drugs. Yeah, I was wondering why there's nobody there. I was wondering why it was dark. Yeah. I was wondering why I had to, like...
Service in that place sucks.
Yeah. And then at that point, she said, well, she was pretty sure she'd gone there that day. And in that same interview, she also repeated that she'd been home all night, the night of January 26th to 27th.
Man, okay, so I have a really bad memory, as you guys know. I don't think I have even this bad of a memory. I mean, maybe like a year
Oh, sure. A year, for sure. But a day before?
Yeah, a day before. Like, I don't know what I did yesterday. I don't know. Maybe she was drunk. Maybe she had gotten
sloshed. Listen. If she is under a lot of stress, if this project is stressing her out and Bob is stressing her out and something else is, and she is just not handling things well. Plus, I seem to also remember somewhere in the reading that she was on some medication that she could have a side effect of messing with your memory.
Yeah, I think she was on Xanax or something like
that. So yeah, so it is possible that she's did go to a store, and it is possible that she went to a Bunnings, but they may not have been in the same day, same trip, and she may have just, in the alphabet soup of her memory on drugs... She may not, and I'm not saying illicit drugs, I'm saying prescribed drugs because of side effects. She might have thought that she was telling them the truth. And, you know, it's one of those things with memory. When you recall it and you say, this is
it. You rewrite it.
You rewrite it and you seed it.
Yeah.
And so she may have inadvertently stuck to the wrong story.
Well, you know, she might have. I mean, that's what a lot of people are saying. They're saying that she might have, it could just be misremembering some things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems like you might say to them, like, you know what? I know this sounds really suspicious. I'm on, you know, some drugs. I'm happy to, like, my doctor can talk to you about the side effects.
But she may not have realized that it was screwing with her memory, though.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. I don't know.
She may, she may.
Anyway, sorry,
she didn't remember.
This is a
good, you know, good murder tip for all you potential murderers out there. Is don't ever give the police too much. You know, just give them the bare minimum. They say, "Well, where were you yesterday?" "Well, I saw Bob, and then I went home." And then later on, they're saying, "Well, we can't account for you being home." I say, "Oh, well, I did stop at the store for a little while on the way home," and that's nothing. That's not suspicious. I mean. If I go, yeah, and so anyway, just a murder tip there.
Good job, Joe.
Yeah, I know. Oh, where were we? So she had talked to the police. This is, you know, again, like a month and a half, I think, after the disappearance. Around this time, the police also talked to Sue's daughter. She had two daughters, as I said, and they showed her a picture of a car, which looked just like Sue's car, and they said, "Well, this photograph was taken right down by the Royal Yacht Club on 12:15 a.m. the night of the murder. Does that look like your mother's car?" And they said, "Well, I guess." And, well, they must have talked to Sue about this, because right after that, her story started to change.
Mm.
Yeah. A few days after that, she told, remember, Aunt Sanchez, Bob's daughter, was on the phone with her, said the night of the disappearance, that she had been worried about Bob out there in the boat by himself. And so she got in the car and drove down to the water to look at the boat. And then she drove back home.
Just to, like, gaze longingly into just the distance
in the dark.
At the boat?
Just to, I don't know what she expected to see, like, you know, because it
drug
was
smugglers.
Dark. Well, yeah, it was. Yeah, maybe she expected to see the boat in flames or something like that. I'm not sure, but...
Well, that bomb she planted.
Yeah, or that.
Somehow hadn't gone off yet.
Yeah, well, and then not long after, on March 13th, she was interviewed by Felicity Ogilvy, who was a reporter for ABC, which was, what, Australian Broadcasting Corporation, I think?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah, and she told her a similar story about about not staying home all night, getting in the car, driving down to check on Bob. Felicity passed this on to the police. This was the first time police had heard this. You know, she had always told them that she was home all night.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that got their interest. Then March 23rd, Sue had a phone conversation with Ann Sanchez again, and this time she said that she had driven down to Marieville Esplanade, again, the street right outside the Royal Yacht Club, and left the car there. That was late that night. Left the car there and walked home for exercise.
Sure.
So changed the story again a little bit. And then May 5th, the police interviewed her again, and she told them that she'd actually been mixed up about time. She was actually on the Four Winds later than she had thought with Bob. And then she said after that she went to shore, left her car parked on Marieville Esplanade or maybe Margaret Street, and walked home because she wanted the exercise. And then later that night, she said, she decided she should go get the car and bring it home. And so that was, again, I don't know how late.
At some point.
Yeah, at some point. So she walks down, again, a two-mile walk from her house. She walks down to the waterfront. And when she got to the waterfront, she realized she'd brought the wrong keys. And so she didn't have the car keys. So she turned around and walked back home. And she got the correct car keys and walked back down to the waterfront.
She definitely hit her step goal for the day, didn't she?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, we're talking like, 6 miles there. And looking...
Plus the original 2 miles she walked home without the car from. So that's a total of 8 miles walking a day.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. That's a lot of walking.
She was 55. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, some people walk.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm not saying that I haven't walked 8 miles in a day. I'm just saying that that's...
Usually when I go for my 6 mile hikes, I do it in the daylight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this would have been late at night, right?
Yeah. Very late at night. Remember, she was on the phone with Richard King till 10:35.
That's right.
Yeah. So it would have been at least, after that. So she finally succeeds in coming down there with the right keys and she got the car. Then she drove north, and you can see this on Google Earth if you look at it. She drove north, and there's a jetty there just not far north of the yacht club, and there's some metal sheds out there where there's a rowing club, and drove out onto the jetty to the end and walked down to the end of the jetty to look across to the boat and see it and just to check on Bob. And who knows, maybe she was, like, jealous. She thought Bob might be partying or something like that. She was looking for, like, bright lights and loud rock music or something like that. Mm-hmm. But she
Little shrimp on the Barbie.
Yeah.
And rock and roll tunes.
Yeah, so she looked out to see if what was going on with Bob. Couldn't see anything because it was pitch black. Because
it was night.
Yeah, it was night. And then she
Surprise.
Went home. Yeah. And then in that same interview, the police asked her about the red jacket again. And they said, I don't know if they actually pulled it out and showed it to her or just mentioned it to her. They said, well... You remember the red jacket that you said you'd never seen before? Well, we tested it for DNA. Your DNA is all over it.
It's your jacket, isn't it,
and,
Sue?
Yeah. So she admitted it was her jacket.
Wait. What's so incriminating about the jacket other than they found it and she lied about it?
Yeah, nothing really. I mean, it's just strange that she lied about it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just making sure I'm clarifying that there wasn't something on it that incriminated her.
I guess I should say the only other thing that was incriminating about it was that Sue had said she left in mid-afternoon. She left the yacht and went to Bunnings and then went home. And the person who lived in the home at 2 Margaret Street found it early in the morning. He said when he came home at night, and I'm not sure exactly what time that night, the jacket was not there.
Mm-hmm.
So sometime in the night,
its way.
The jacket winds up on this wall.
Okay.
And so, that's the significance of the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And also the denial, frankly, never looks good to police.
So none of this is looking good for her when she goes to court.
No, it doesn't look that great. Yeah. And at trial, it did go to trial. Things didn't get better. And so remember what I just said after she'd gotten the car, she'd driven to the end of the jetty to look at the four winds and check on Bob. Well, it turns out there was somebody else on that jetty that night. His name was John Hughes, and he testified that he didn't see anybody else out there. And since Sue said she'd driven out to the end of the pier or the jetty in her car...
It'd be pretty hard to miss.
That would be kind of hard to miss, yeah. And Hughes also testified that he did see a woman or somebody who looked like a woman in an inflatable dinghy with an outboard motor heading northeast from the Royal Yacht Club and in the general direction of the Four Winds. And that was about between 11:30 and maybe 12 that night.
Okay.
And so... So that's not so bueno. And then also the police, as I said, interviewed everybody that Sue knew and Sue and Bob knew. And they happened to track down this guy, one of the sailors, Peter Stevenson, the guy
Guys who helped bring the boat to where they were at. Yeah.
Yeah, one of that guy. He testified that Sue, when they were on the trip, told him that her relationship with Bob had been strained and that it was basically over and it had been over for some time. He also said that when they arrived in Hobart and Bob met them, apparently he approached Sue, maybe wanting to hug her or something like that. And she just basically kind of stood back from him and ignored him. Was not warm towards him at all. So again, that doesn't prove anything.
No, it just proves that they were fighting.
Yeah, I mean, but still.
Which is a very normal thing for couples to do.
Well, it is, but they've been apart for quite a while. I don't know how long it takes to sail from Queensland down to Tasmania. I would think it would take a while. I mean, think like a week anyway.
Something like that. But listen, if something gets on in somebody's, they get a burr under their saddle and they are pissed at you about something.
Yeah.
And they've had a week to stew on it by themselves and then you show up.
Yeah, maybe.
They're not going to welcome you with open arms. They're going to say, get the hell away from me.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, this is all not necessarily proof of anything like that. Yeah, there was some tension between them.
Okay.
But I don't know. What more testimony they had? They had Bob's son, Tim Chappell. He testified that he'd been with Bob and Sue in the Four Winds twice in the month before the murder. And he said the tension between them was so thick that you could cut it with a knife. He said it made him uncomfortable. And then he also said that Sue told him on January 27th, again, this is like right after Bob disappeared, Four Winds had been broken into twice in Hobart. And Tim said he was surprised because he hadn't heard anything about this before. And I got the impression that Tim actually had a fairly close relationship with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad so probably would have mentioned something like that known. Too. And that's why he felt surprised by it. And she actually, I mean, as far as all the break-ins, she, I mean, Sue had said that it had been broken into, the yacht had been broken into up in Queensland. Later on, she denied that she had ever said that. She said, and it's so, her statements on that, and that's why there's a lot of statements she made about this stuff. I'm not talking too much about that because she was all over the place on that.
Well, and there's this is, again, another one of those stories where there's so many conflicting accounts, especially when they come from that one person, that it's hard to cover them all because you just, it becomes jibber jabber.
Yeah.
It's hard to follow because it's, I did this, no, I did that, I did this, no, I did that, I did this, and
Yeah, the whole break-in thing, yeah. And there were a few other testimonies to the fact that she had said that the relationship was over. I'm not going to name names or going too deeply into that, except for one guy, a former friend. I don't think they had a falling out, but they just sort of like,
Stopped hanging out,
lost track of each other. But this guy's name was Philip Triffitt. Last name reminds me of Triffid. Mm. But he used to be buddies with them, and he testified that in the 1990s, I think this was like 96 or 97, he was on Sue's boat. This was the boat that she owned prior to the Four Winds. And they were out, and she asked him to help her take her brother Patrick out to sea and drown him.
What?
Yeah, apparently there was some dispute between Sue and Patrick over her mother's property, and so Sue had this plan to weigh Patrick down with a toolbox and send him off to Davy Jones' locker. And then her idea was that Philip Triffitt would then take the boat closer to shore and sink it after she had gone ashore in the dinghy. And then he testified in court, she showed him how they could sink the boat by using the bilge pump. And that'd be another way, too. I mean, besides just shutting it off, you could actually reverse it. Could reverse it.
So did he mention if she came up and explained this entire plan over a case of Foster's?
I'm assuming they were on a boat. I'm assuming there were a few beers involved.
Well, that's what, you know, it's like you sit around and you can talk. I mean, if you got nothing to do but talk for days, you can come up with some wild stuff and keep going, especially if you're boozing it up.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, if they put me on trial for murder, all the people that they could drag in to talk about, how many times did Joe talk about murder with you? Well, quite a few times,
see,
actually.
We've done 200 and...
Yeah, it wouldn't look good for me. That's why I got to stay out of that whole thing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know why, but Philip Triffitt, I don't know why he didn't agree with this plan, or maybe it was the part about him sinking the boat after she'd taken off with the lifeboat, like the that was her plan. You sink the boat while I'm going to shore in the dinghy. So apparently,
you hang out on the sinking boat.
Yeah, that never came to it. Maybe he was a good swimmer. I don't know. But he also testified that not too long after that, he and Sue had another conversation at her home, and Sue said that she wanted to do a similar thing as she talked about with her brother Patrick before, except she wanted to do it with Bob, and she wanted to wrap him in chicken wire instead of doing the whole, I don't know why chicken wire, but
maybe this is why Philip didn't want to be friends with her anymore.
Maybe.
Because she just kept being like, these are all the ways I'm going to murder the people around me. And he was like, maybe I shouldn't maybe I don't need this.
Friend at work.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, so he's like thinking like, well, when I'm not around, she talk about murdering me.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Maybe
yeah,
I don't so need I, this kind of negativity
do I,
in
yeah,
my life.
Do I want, or maybe do I want to be boating with this person?
No.
Out in the ocean?
Uh-huh.
Maybe not. Don't turn your back on her anyway. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that didn't look so good. Of course, that's not dispositive, but in the when you look at all the other things that people are saying, Sue said to them, well, it doesn't look so good.
And she could have just been a generally unpleasant person.
I don't know.
I mean, it's completely possible.
Yeah.
Probable.
I don't know. But long story short, Sue was convicted and sent to the pokey for murder, based on a very circumstantial case. And of course, her family and friends began a movement to exonerate her and get her sprung from prison. Again, as we already said, the case against her wasn't really airtight. There was no body, no murder weapon. There was that DNA evidence showing two other people had been on the boat. And they also stressed, as we've already talked about, that her changing stories might have been the result of a poor memory and stress and drug use. And then there were three witnesses who said they saw a gray dinghy alongside the Four Winds that day. Of course, and the Four Winds dinghy is white.
Hmm.
So, and they said they saw a gray dinghy.
Yeah, varying grays of varying shades of white.
Well,
and distance. And
that is the deal, is that, and certain, especially if it's in the shade and stuff like that on a sunny day.
I don't put a whole lot of stock in it. It was a gray versus white boat.
Yeah, I know. And I also mentioned that thing about the Victoria Police doing their review, and they're thinking that the deposit of Megan Voss's DNA was by direct contact and not transference. And they also said that they felt that it would have been, quote, mechanically impossible for the applicant to have winched the deceased in the manner described by police, unquote. So that was their considered opinion. They didn't think it was possible for her to get that body out of the cabinet into the dinghy, not for Sue anyway.
Okay.
That's what they said. And then last of all, there was a local sailor whose name I can't remember now. I saw a picture of him.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the picture of him was a somewhat older picture where he had long shoulder length hair.
Uh-huh.
And he came out after the trial and conviction and said, "Well, I was out of my dinghy that night, and my hair was down to my shoulders. Maybe he saw John Hughes on the jetty at the rowing shed, saw me and not Sue. I mean, it could have been he saw me."
And saying you're going in the general direction of a boat is a pretty wide swath of direction. So.
Yeah, it is. It is. So these are some of the various things that have made people think that, well, maybe Sue's case deserves another look.
Mm-hmm.
And it has had another look or two. Again, there's been appeals and more appeals. The most recent one, I think, was to the Australian Supreme Court. So this is what we call controversy. As I said, it's gotten huge coverage in Australia. And of course there's that $40,000 reward that I think I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
And
the billboard.
And in this latest appeal earlier in this year, Sue's defense lawyers promised there'd be some startling new fresh evidence. And it is, because Megan Voss, remember her, has returned.
Oh.
Yeah.
That girl.
Uh-huh. But before we talk about that, let's take a break.
You wake up one morning and realize you're 30, or 40, or 50. You feel bloated and chubby from overindulging like you're 21 again. You promise yourself that this year is the year you are going to do something about it. Why not make things easier on yourself with a customized protein drink that's jam-packed with all the essential nutrients you, yes you, need. It allows you to personalize your mix while delivering the highest quality of fruits, vegetables, and protein, plus 25 essential vitamins and minerals. And since iFit Nourish is passionate and picky about their ingredients, there's no artificial flavors, no added coloring, no preservatives, and no filters. Ever. And don't worry, all of their flavors have been approved by a panel of taste judges, aka us, and are completely delicious. Are you ready to simplify your life? Just go to ifitnourish.com/sideways for a free 14-serving bag of iFit Nourish mix and shaker bottle. It's hassle-free and 100% convenient. It's ifitnourish.com/sideways to create your own mix today, because motivation is hard enough.
And we're back. In April 2017, which is just, mere months ago.
Yep.
Megan Voss finally fessed up. She signed a statement admitting that on the night of January 26, 2009, she was indeed on board the Four Winds with two unnamed men. And this obviously is a game changer. I mean, all the other previous appeals, they've never really brought any startling, fresh, new evidence.
They're really just fighting what they considered circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, essentially, just they keep, going...
poking holes in the case.
Yeah, trying to, just saying, hey, this guy had long hair that night, and he said he was out in his boat. Yeah.
Luminol activates on other things, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this was really a game changer. But then in fall, this is just a couple of months ago, it was time for Megan... And obviously, by the way, if you're listening in the year 2057, well, it was 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, for us, from this standpoint. But when it was time for Megan to take the stand, she recanted her story. She said she had been coerced into signing the statement about being on the Four Winds. And it turns out that her boyfriend was a biker named Sharky.
Great name.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to change mine to that.
Uh-huh. He is a member of the Devil's Henchman Motorcycle Club.
Mm.
That's a fun name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Her this boyfriend, Sharky, had another girlfriend. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, right.
Good relationship.
I know. These are wonderful people. This other girlfriend's name is Karen Keefe. Karen did some time in prison. Turns out she was in the same prison as Sue Neill Fraser.
Of course she was.
Yeah. And Karen seems to have hatched a scheme to collect that $40,000 reward, plus some other money. There was talk in the press about a total amount of $93,000.
Wow.
Australian.
What?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Where'd the other $50K come from?
Well, I'm not totally sure about that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that Sue promised it to her or anything like that. Maybe somebody else. I had no idea exactly who promised her this
some
money.
Kind of private source that we don't know about.
But yeah, exactly. But anyway, we're talking about an overall amount of, a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least in Australia. But the scheme involved getting Megan to confess involvement in the crime, which would tend to make it possible to maybe get Sue out of prison. But it turns out when Megan recanted, she said she had been coerced. She said that she was, quote, threatened to be put in the boot of a car over that piece of paper, unquote. Mm-hmm. Said, yeah.
That doesn't sound like fun to me.
No, I assume what was meant by that is put in the boot of a car, like dead.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
I picked that up.
Yeah, and so it turns out that was a big fizzle. That piece of fresh evidence is kind of out the window. And as for Karen O'Keefe, if you're wondering, she and a couple of other people, one of them was an attorney, have been charged with, quote, perverting the course of justice, unquote.
So they're in more trouble now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they...
Understandably.
Courts really don't like it when you pull this kind of card.
No, surprise!
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Sue's supporters have also brought in a guy named Paul Rowe, that's W-R-O-E, who turns out was living on his boat in Sandy Bay, which is right about there, nearby. The Four Winds. Yeah. And it turns out Paul has a violent criminal past, and he's been accused by some people of being a serial killer.
And so this on forums that came out.
Yeah. some people have said he would be a very credible suspect as a killer of Bob. So, obviously, they seem to be basically throwing everything they can at the wall, seeing if anything will stick.
Right.
Yeah, Paul Rowe says he never met Sue or Bob. He says he's not a serial killer. In fact, he says he's going to sue a few people over that.
He gave DNA evidence.
Yeah, he gave the police DNA evidence in 2012. I think they probably did question everybody who was anywhere nearby, and so he did give them DNA evidence. His sample didn't match anything having to do with the crime. And as for his criminal past, Rowe says it was just youthful exuberance, your usual bar fights and stabbings, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
he did have kind of normal
kid stuff.
He did have kind of a sketchy youth, as far as I know, there is no evidence to incriminate him in Paul Rowe and in Bob's death in any way. So the latest appeal to free Sue appears to have fizzled, kind of like circling the drain. I think this might be it as far as trying to get her out of prison. But nonetheless, opinion down under is still sharply divided as to whether Sue actually did the deed or not.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is who murdered, or at least who disappeared, Bob Chappell?
Right.
Great question.
Yeah, we go
well. Somehow we're not in theories yet.
We will be in theories in a moment here. Just give me
finally
a chance here. Yeah, I know. Let's toss out some theories here. So who did it? What happened? Okay.
Theory number one.
Theory number one. No particular order here, but one popular theory is that the Tasmanian devil got him.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people believe that Bob was the victim of a random Tasmanian devil attack.
Why is there an asterisk after that sentence?
When I say a lot, I mean a number between 0 and 500,000.
Did the Tasmanian devil think that he was Bugs Bunny and therefore had to attack him? Because that's the only reason the Tasmanian devil ever kills in the Warner Brother cartoons.
It could be like misdirection. Maybe Sue tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, Bugs is on that boat. Kill him. I don't know.
This is obviously not real.
No, I'm not going to give this any more oxygen because I actually think the Tasmanian devils get kind of an unfair rap. They're actually very cute little animals, and they are totally harmless when they're not trying to murder you.
And they're cousins of Choopy, so we got to be nice to them.
That's true. Actually, and I couldn't do this without going out on the web and looking at some Tasmanian devil pictures, and they are pretty cute.
When they're not hissing and screaming with their mouths open at you with drool coming out? Yeah, they're great.
And they do have large jaws and lots of teeth.
They're the Australian raccoon.
Yeah, they kind of are. But yeah, when they're not doing that, they're kind of cute looking. So, okay, so much for that.
Good job, by the way, Devin, for not freaking out at the mention of a raccoon.
Thank you.
Is this a therapy is working?
Yeah.
It's like just
exposure therapy.
Exposure, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, all right. Now our next theory,
she's asleep.
Yeah, I don't think she cares. She's staring at her phone and not actually reacting at all.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Staring at the script and not reacting at all.
Okay. At the script in dismay.
Next theory?
Our next theory. Bob Chappell left to start a new life, pausing only to frame Sue on his way out the door.
No,
that would have meant Bob like giving up all of his retirement, just going off to start a new life and living in poverty somewhere. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Another possibility is maybe Bob committed suicide and either willingly or not incriminated Sue at the same time, which I'd say was well done, sir. But it seems unlikely.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no evidence for that. They would have found his body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they did, as I mentioned, scour the river pretty well, especially where the boat was. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay, so the suicide thing is out. So another one is, maybe Bob died accidentally, and then Sue discovers him dead, decides to ditch the body, thinking, well, now since I've talked to so many people about the possibility of murdering Bob, and now he's dead on the boat, maybe this would look kind of bad. Maybe I should just ditch the body.
Yeah, maybe me dumping the body in the exact way I discussed murdering people sounds like a better idea.
Hey, see, it wasn't exact. She used a fire extinguisher, not a toolbox.
See, this is very dumb to me, because if indeed she had found him dead in some form, I don't care whether it was he accidentally stuck a fork in his own head or he drowned in an inch of water in the bottom of the boat.
Uh-huh.
If she immediately took the dinghy, I'm guessing they didn't have a cell phone, so she immediately went back to the marina and called the cops.
She actually had her cell phone on her on the yacht when she visited Bob that afternoon.
Okay, so I'm just saying, but even if she didn't have a phone on her and she had to go make the call, nobody would have said, "Huh, why did you leave?" Like it wouldn't have looked as weird as just the body disappearing.
Not at all. So I mean, that's obviously a ridiculous idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much our listeners love to hear theories, and lots of theories. So we'll throw them all out there.
Oh yeah, yeah. None of them are sticking though so far.
Kind of like the free Sue team, they're like just keep throwing stuff at the wall and it seems to stick, Another theory, and this is a popular theory, I'm not lying now, that somebody other than Sue murdered Bob, and that's what a lot of people believe. Of course, the presence of two sets of DNA on the boat, one of which is unknown, would suggest that maybe this is kind of possible.
Well, and this would lend credibility to the odd things, like the dinghy being randomly floating loose and stuff like that.
Maybe, yeah. So somebody stole the dinghy, went out to the boat, murdered Bob, and then took it back to shore and didn't bother to tie it up and didn't bother to clean out the blood in the bottom, because why would you? Why would you care? It's not your dinghy and, you don't care. So, okay. But on the other hand, of course, if Sue had used the dinghy, it's conceivable she could have left it untied, expecting it to drift out to sea. So the fact that the dinghy was untied does not prove that somebody other than Sue took the dinghy.
She would have to be amazingly unaware of the way that water moves inside of a marina to think that it would just float away.
Stuff. Yeah, and tides and all that good stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she may have been amazingly unaware. I don't know. I've seen
things untied in the waterfront here in Portland at the marina that you and I used to go to all the time.
Yeah.
And it was exceedingly difficult for things to get out. And it seems so simple, and yet stuff would just bounce around in there and never go away.
Yeah, well, that's because there's a decent-sized current, and that's in an eddy. I mean, I could totally see the Royal Yacht Club being in an eddy, because it is kind of in a dimple in the coastline.
Yeah, but my point is a dinghy floats on top of the water, so it's going to be hard to find that one or two little escape points.
One thing I will say is that when I was Googling other things that will light luminol up, bleach is one of the things that will light luminol up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that she did bleach out the bottom of the dinghy, thinking, well, they'll, you know, they won't find any blood in it because it'll have been cleaned. Yeah. But if they find it floating, it'll make it look more like somebody who didn't really care about it, you know, just threw it away or whatever. And
Yeah, exactly.
Then they did test it for luminol, and she was like, oh, dang.
Conversely, though, if that dinghy came with the boat and they bought the boat used and the boat was not in the greatest of shape, that dinghy may not have been in the greatest of shape. And somebody might have said, ha, it's a white dinghy and the interior is brown. Maybe I should bleach it and see if I could clean it. I mean, there's a million ways that
that somebody else could have been murdered in the dinghy, too. I mean,
yeah,
realistically, it could be... I don't know how long blood sticks around to, you know, light luminol up. But
and I don't know how often you clean your dinghy either.
I wouldn't clean it
It's on an individual basis. Each person is different.
Probably,
but it is weird. I mean, you know, it's weird that there's two sets of DNA and that one of them is Megan Voss, maybe, but maybe not, but probably.
Probably is her, or her, at least her DNA.
But I guess I thought the point of, like, even, you know, putting your boat at a yacht club is that, like, there's restricted access. It's like a gated community for your boat,
so
it's safer.
People, you know, people like to break into boats. And
boats are easy to break into.
That's why people put them in locked marinas and stuff. And so if your boat was tied up in the marina, it would have been difficult to get to. Unless it was maybe somebody, there was a serial killer, like, you know, living or at least using the marina, could have gone out
Dexter
there.
Dexter style.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Dexter owned a boat. There you go. Yeah.
Oh, with Dexter.
Yeah, it could have been Dexter down under.
Australian Dexter.
Yeah.
What's Australian for Dexter? Does anybody
Dexter.
Know?
Dexter.
What's up? What's Dexter upside down? Yeah. That's your answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm not going to say it.
Rhett.
Okay,
it's fine.
No, it's too much of a tongue twister.
Yeah.
But of course, if somebody else, say, had access to the club and they stole the dinghy and took it out to the boat, killed Bob, then that renders the whole Megan Voss sub theory kind of moot anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it still doesn't totally
pointless.
Explain why her DNA was there, but sure.
No, it doesn't. And I'm thinking with Megan, you know, it could just possibly be she didn't want to admit to this, but it might just be that she and some of her friends at some point got their hands on a small boat, decided to go out. Because everyone, I mean, if you look at the aerial, I don't know if it's the same case in 2009 as it is now, but literally I counted the boats out there. There were like 60 large boats anchored off the yacht club when that photo was taken. And so I could totally see some ne'er-do-well types, if they get their hands on a boat, going out there some night. And just, you know, going from boat to boat, finding boats that are unoccupied, seeing if they can break in and steal stuff.
Pilfer some stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe she at some point, you know, she and her friends pulled alongside that boat and she reached out and grabbed it, you know, and maybe they, you know, heard Bob down below or whatever and just took off. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
So it could be that she actually was on the boat or touched the boat or something. I mean, who knows? But as far as somebody else doing it, there's a couple of problems with this. Like I just said, there are lots of yachts anchored there. All those boats are going to have tenders for getting to shore with. A big chunk of those boats would have had their tenders tied up in the Royal Yacht Club. And the club also would have had other small boats to steal.
For non-nautical types, tenders are the dinghy.
Yeah, the tenders are the dinghy. Yeah, the tender is the thing you use to get to shore. Sorry about that.
Nope.
But
people keep asking for you to use all those nautical terms, and I realize, wait, we're losing them.
Use boaty talk.
Boaty talk. But so there's all these small boats to steal in this marina. It's kind of an amazing coincidence that somebody intending to go out to the Four Winds and commit murder, robbery, whatever, happened to take the same exact tender belonging to that same exact boat out of the marina. That's really remarkable. And as you were saying, you know, was it marked?
We don't think so, right?
At best I can tell, like I said, I've seen two pictures of it, and I haven't seen it from every single angle, but I didn't see any markings on it that indicated it was belonged to the Four Winds.
Right. Mm-hmm. But maybe Sue's knots were really easy to actually get off, undo, people actually used a cable lock.
Maybe her marks were extra special crappy. That's a good point.
She's like, three square knots. That worked.
Yeah. Mm. Of course, and you could argue that if they did somehow know it was, like, if it was marked the Four Winds, maybe somebody says, okay, there's a boat out there called Four Winds. This must be the cruise ashore. Mm-hmm. And so we'll take the dinghy out there because we know that since they're ashore, the boat's empty, we can go rob it.
But if there's anywhere from 20 to 60 boats out there,
they
got to
go find them.
They got to go find the thing.
That's going to take a while, unless they've really been watching through binoculars and they've got them all marked or something like that.
Yeah, which speaks to a grander, larger conspiracy slash plan.
Right, exactly.
And the Four Winds wasn't like the grandest boat.
Not there, right?
Not
because
there would be something to be said of.
Well, it was plated
look,
gold.
That's the biggest boat out there.
Yeah.
We're going to that one.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I'm sure it was one of the larger ones at 53 feet. That's a pretty decent sized boat.
But it wasn't like the biggest of them.
It's not a mega yacht. 53 feet is not that enormous.
But it's not tiny. I mean, maybe that was it.
It's a substantial boat. Yeah,
maybe that was just it. Is they thought, oh yeah, this says four or you know whatever, and we're gonna go out to that boat that's the biggest one.
Yeah,
and rob it. And then, you know, midway through the robbery, Bob comes up and they're like, dang it.
Exactly. So they hit him over the head with something. And and of course, they don't know if they've killed him or not. I mean, you know, you don't know. I always loved that in the movies when they cock somebody out, you know. It's like, you know, and they're just always so assured that he's knocked out. And it's like, you know, maybe you killed him, dude. Mm-hmm. They never even think about that. But they don't know Bob is alive or dead. And the sensible thing to do at this point is that, well, okay, we just hit this guy. We better get out of here. Let's go back to shore. We'll burn the dinghy or whatever. Get rid of the dinghy. And hopefully his head injury will prevent him from remembering our faces. And that's that.
It sounds like a Liam Neeson movie.
Yeah, really. Uh-huh. But, I mean, it really is a sensible thing to do. I mean, going, you know, taking his body and hauling it out way out towards the sea and dumping it and stuff like that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Unless you're trying to hide the body.
Well, but, I mean, it's like, you know, if you're just doing a little robbery kind of thing, if you do happen to get caught,
a little robbery thing.
You can just say, look, you know, we had no intention of hurting anybody. You know, he just got kind of hit on the head and nobody intended to hurt anybody
he
or kill him.
And
or,
fell.
Yeah, whatever. You know, I mean, it makes, but then what really doesn't make any sense is to get rid of the body and then try to draw attention to the boat by trying to sink it. That doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
For anybody to do that.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole, I mean, the motive thing here, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's very, very loose.
I don't know.
And so, I
guess it's a plausible theory, but it doesn't really answer most of the questions I have.
No, it doesn't. And nobody has surfaced really with any kind of a motive to do it, unless it was somebody completely random. All right. So that leaves us with one other possibility, which is that Sue Neill Fraser murdered Bob.
Intentionally.
The evidence kind of looks that way. Sue really is the one person who had a motive to sink the boat, which would be like, you know, I think what a potential motive would have been Sue didn't want to be the one to discover the body or the evidence of foul play or anything. So by sinking the boat, or at least, you know, sending it lower in the water, because she knows it's going to take that boat a long time to sink, you know, and so she, you know, does that, and then knowing that somebody's probably going to notice, and she'll be called down there, and she can just, you know, show up, and she won't be the first person on the murder scene. So, you know, that's a possible motive. I mean, I don't know. It's not rock solid, but that's the only motive I can think of for really sinking the boat.
Well, I know that this sounds dumb with a boat, but it always seems like if you're going to destroy the evidence, burning the boat would be much more efficient in destroying evidence than trying to sink it.
Well, what I would have done if I would have been sued.
I mean, think if you get like a kerosene lantern or something like that, and you just push it over on a cushion, and then you run and leave.
Yeah.
It's going to catch fire.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, boats sink.
Yeah, they do.
Sometimes. And I don't know that there's a, you know, if you have insurance on it and your boat sinks and you get to claim insurance, I don't know that they're going to go in there and be like, oh, look, it looks like these
sabotage.
Are the three sabotage things. They're going to be like, wow, that sucks. Your boat sunk.
Well, I think
here's the money.
Somebody's going to investigate a sinking. They always do. It's like when airplanes crash, somebody investigates it, even if it's a private craft.
Right. But I don't know how well how thorough it is, or, you know, I don't know boats well enough to know if you could tell, you know, if these certain things were sabotaged necessarily or whatever. So I guess that's always my assumption with when people try to scuttle their boats by sinking them is that it's like, that's the easiest way to say, like, I don't know, something happened, it sank.
Yeah.
You know, the bilge pump malfunctioned and it stopped pumping and, you know, it sank.
Or reversed, it sank. Whoops. Yeah, obviously, you know, Sue didn't plan the crime as well as she could have. If she did it, of course, we don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would have, you know, if I had been her, I would have just not bothered moving the body. I would have just, you know, put some C4 into the bottom of the hull on timers and then just taken it out to sea and set the timers, jump in the dinghy, head back to shore, and the boat blows up and it sinks nice and quickly. You don't have this hours and hours and hours of slowly sinking. Mm-hmm. It just,
you know, and then you just blame Kevin Spacey for the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's done.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So run through the official how this theory works, because I mean we just kind of danced around it, but
the official prosecution theory, you mean?
Well, yeah. Or, I mean, give everybody what you've got here about why Sue would have done it, or why it's believed why she did it. Why is she the strong candidate?
Yeah, she's a strong candidate because she had a motive, financial motive. She's the only person that ever talked about killing Bob. Numerous people testified that there was tension between them, that their relationship didn't seem to be that good. She was very near the murder scene the night in question, and she tried to cover that up.
And she had really kind of super questionable alibis.
Yeah, well, she did. I mean, for example, if she did indeed drive down there, take the dinghy out, and because the assumption is Bob was already dead, she goes out there later to get rid of the body, right? And so, she killed him
in the early afternoon.
Early to middle to late afternoon sometime.
But then just
during the fight.
Well, I had to leave the body because it was still daylight. The sun didn't set till 8:41 p.m., mm-hmm. and so she couldn't get rid of the body until after dark.
Okay.
Yeah, and so she goes back down. Now, getting rid of the body is going to take her at least 2-3 hours. And in that meantime, her car is parked right there on Marieville Esplanade or maybe Margaret Street. And so to account for that, I mean, there's one thing to say, well, okay, I drove down there, walked over, looked out, came back. But how do you account for the fact if somebody springs up? Because Sue had to become aware after they found this picture of her car. She had to become aware that perhaps other witnesses might come out and say, yeah, I remember seeing that parked in front of my house for like 4 hours the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. She becomes aware of this. So she cooks up this story, which is, okay, I walked all the way down there, realized I'd forgotten the keys.
The forgotten keys
walked
scenario.
All the way back home, walked all the way back down. And that would account for the car being there for this very long period of time, parked in that place where, mm-hmm. you know, it shouldn't have been. And that would be enough time to do what she intended to do, which is go move the body and get rid of it.
Which is why you always leave your cell phone at home and you use a bicycle to get to the crime scene.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I tie my cell phone to a raccoon's tail.
In this case, it would have been a Tasmanian devil's tail, which is the Australian raccoon.
Well, so what? And what else? If she's the one person who she needed to get to the Four Winds, using the Four Winds dinghy would actually know where that dinghy belonging to the Four Winds was moored. And also, the other thing is that if somebody else, like say, used another boat, some other killer, to go out to the Four Winds and commit murder, which is possible, I guess, then why did somebody the very same night untie Sue's dinghy and throws the rope inside to cast it adrift? Well, that's quite a major coincidence when you think about it.
Yeah.
That this all happened. And I don't think this crime was well planned. I mean, it's entirely possible, I think, that it was a crime of passion, that they were having an argument. Sue picks up a blunt object and just bashes Bob over the head with it because she snaps and hits him, didn't really actually go down there intending to murder him in cold blood.
Right.
And the reason I think that is it's just not a well-planned crime.
No.
I mean, the idea of murdering him below decks, leaving all that blood evidence down there and everything, and having to go through the huge hassle of hauling his body up and getting it into that dinghy.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had been her, I would have lured him into the dinghy and then bashed him over the head.
I suspect, I actually think she might have actually hit him with the fire extinguisher.
Yeah, maybe.
You know.
That would account for it being missing, too. It's a murder weapon.
And also, you know, convenient thing to weigh somebody down with.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, again, murder tip, fire extinguishers, even when they're heavy, they have a big old fat air bubble right in the middle of them.
Yep.
Don't use a fire extinguisher. Use lead.
Use a wrench. Just a wrench.
Use cast iron something, yeah.
You know, because cast iron is so handy to lame into these days.
Actually, you can get cast iron cheap. Go out on Craigslist and buy a used weight set. Olympic weight set, you know?
Yeah.
And that's and there's just dirt cheap. And
yeah. It's super easy to move around in your dinghy, too.
True.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It takes up a lot less space than concrete. And unlike concrete, little bits of it don't crumble off.
Yep.
You know, and also it's a lot denser than concrete, less buoyant. So, yeah, cast iron all the way.
Okay.
Get rid of bodies.
All right.
Yeah, but
become Mr. Universe and dump a body all in one purchase.
Yeah, so here's, and this is one of the things I do. I think, well, how would I have done the crime? And that's, again, first off, wait till right after dark, lure Bob into the dinghy by pretending not to be able to get it started or something. Hit him over the head. You've already got 200 pounds of cast iron stashed at the bottom of the dinghy. So, and you head on out towards sea. Tie Bob to the dinghy and to the cast iron weights. And then when you're far enough out towards sea, you puncture the dinghy. Again, pull close to shore, puncture the dinghy so you can swim to shore. Head the dinghy towards deeper water and swim to shore. And then, of course, you've thoughtfully hidden the moped somewhere nearby to get you home. And voila. That's the way I would have committed this murder. Sue obviously doesn't think about things quite the way I do.
So we think Sue did it.
I think Sue did it. I don't know what you guys think.
I think Sue did it.
Oh, well, listen, you know, I realized that we glossed over a theory in a theory, which is the Bob died by accident theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your theory, Bob died by accident and then she tried to hide it, excludes the Bob died by accident and disappeared by accident, and she's just a ding-dong and got herself in trouble. Uh-huh. I mean, if he's working on... Okay, listen. I just thought about this, because it just kind of one of those things that happens to me every four or five stories. It clicks. My brain turns on.
Yeah.
If he's working on the boat, it's entirely possible that he could have hurt himself, which would have accounted for blood being sprayed around. He's working on the boat, which would explain why carpet tiles are pulled up and ladders are loose and stuff like that.
Okay.
And we've also seemed to have agreed that Bob is a bit clumsy because she says he's bad at getting off the boat.
Well, she said that, but other people contradicted that, though.
Okay, but maybe he's not the best seaman in the world.
Yeah.
And at this point, he is bleeding and he runs up onto the top of the boat and falls off the boat. I mean, it's entirely possible that he is then literally swept out to sea because he is outside of the marina. It's not as if his body's going to get trapped in underneath everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is possible that that what she said, though as dumb as it is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob hurt himself, sprayed blood all over, and then fell off the boat. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really it, but it's possible, just like everything else we've talked about, except the Tasmanian devil, because that one's not right.
You don't like that one?
I know it's not real.
I didn't.
Because Taz never spins over water.
I don't know if they swim either, to be honest
with
you.
They don't.
Yeah.
I think she killed him.
Yeah, I don't see any other way to... I'm surprised that this is as controversial as it is, because... there's just no other explanation. Even memory loss does not account for the strange story about walking down to the car twice in the middle of the night.
You would have remembered that, right? Like, there's at some point, yes, memory loss, fine, whatever. Get confused about what store you were at and how blah. But if you walked 8 freaking miles in the middle of the night, you would remember that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you would probably tell people that. Like, immediately.
Well, and on top of that, it's not just the inconsistency of the stories or the memory loss or anything. It's the whole question of why the hell would she do it to begin with?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I really wanted to get the car. Well, why don't you just wait till morning and walk down then? I mean, go ahead and, you know, go back to sleep and walk down. I mean, walking down there in the middle of the night made utterly no sense.
Yeah.
And again, the whole idea that somebody else killed Bob, well, that's fine. I can entirely see that. But then you got this amazing coincidence of all these strange things that Sue did that night.
Yeah.
She walked back and forth back and forth with the car.
But it's also...
Her dinghy comes untied, you know, even though she said she was never anywhere near it. She went out to the end of a pier to look for Bob, but the witness was right there, and she was not there at the pier.
Well, I mean, it's also, you know, it's the timing with which she suddenly came forward with this stuff.
Oh, that's suspicious, too.
Yeah, it's... If you're only coming out with this stuff when somebody says, okay, but we saw your car, and she goes, oh, yeah, you're right, I remember. This is what happened. Obviously, you're lying about it.
Well, obviously.
Obviously.
And that's the thing, is that if this truly is a miscarriage of justice, then all Sue needs to do is, like, give us an honest accounting of what the hell. What were you up to that night?
She may be ashamed to admit what she was up to. I mean, it's entirely possible that she didn't do what she said because she was with somebody else. Yeah. Maybe their relationship truly was done to her.
You would think
and
that,
she was fooling around, and that's why she left the car there overnight.
Fair enough, but if you are looking at 28 years in prison, aren't you going to be like, you're right, I lied, I was sleeping with this person, and they will corroborate my story. Right.
They're, how old was Sue at
55
at the time of her conviction? Okay.
Yeah.
There are people of that generation that admitting things like having an illicit affair, they would rather die first.
They weren't married. I mean,
but right. they might as well be. And there are people who they would rather die first than admit that they were going outside of socially acceptable behavior. There's been accounts of this before where it's, you know, it wasn't until the other person came forward to say, listen, dummy over there, he and I were doing it. So obviously he wasn't there and he would still be denied. I mean, people do this stuff.
Okay.
It's flawed logic, but it happens.
Well, we just have to agree to disagree on that.
Oh, I'm fine with that.
She killed him.
She killed him, yeah. Yeah, she's like, yeah, so you...
I feel Joe's cell phone is still strapped to a raccoon's tail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, all you folks down under, you can go to sleep, you know. I mean, stop worrying, stop arguing with one another. You know, it's done. We've decided Sue's guilty. All right. Well, that's it. Another mystery solved. Anyway, if you got a theory of your own or if I've mispronounced any words, if you're suing in prison and you want to argue with us, hey, that's fine. You can email us. The email is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. So, yeah, tell us what you think. And we also have a website, thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. where you can download and listen to our episodes. We have merch. What else? We got an episode list.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's kind of a new thing. So definitely go check that out. We're also on iTunes where you can download and listen, subscribe, give us a rating, give us a review, a good review. We like those. And, of course, you can stream us from God knows how many places.
Everywhere.
Know, yeah, a lot of places. Google
Everywhere Play. In the internet.
Yeah. We are on social media. We are on Facebook, where we have a group and a page. You want to like the page, join the group.
Correct.
Yeah, that's it. Don't friend the page. No, just join the group. And that's how you can hang out with us and all of our buddies. And there's lots of fun stuff happening out there. Yeah. We're also on Twitter, where we are Thinking Sideways without the G. And there's lots of fun stuff going on out there. Devin is posting all the time, like a
constantly.
Little, yeah, I mean, you're like a fiend, like a Tasmanian devil almost.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh,
I am.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
What else? We got a subreddit, which is, you know, kind of active, sort of. Yeah, I need to get out there actually more often. But there is a subreddit, Thinking Sideways. And of course, you know, what else? We got merchandise. We got shirts, mugs, stickers, Zazzle and Redbubble stores there on the right hand side of our website. Well, I guess that's about it. Time to wrap this thing up and head on home. You guys got any last thoughts, comments?
No, let's steam it out of here.
All right.
No, I can't even pawn right now. I'm sorry.
No,
you're at the wheel.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.